So it wasn't like I woke up one day and I was like, ah, let's start a cooking school.
Well, I do remember that because that's when I started, was when you had to do it illegally.
Understanding city zoning laws and the health department and all the various agencies that you have to connect with in order to start a business is really, really challenging.
The smartest person you know is watching reality television.
Actually, when you're working in food and you really want to have a lasting career, like, your reputation is number one.
Well, welcome back to Kitchen Tape. I'm Rose Wild.
And I'm Cassie Mendieta.
And today we have Clemence.
Hi.
Tell us a little about yourself, Clemence.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. I am a baker and a mom of three, and I love chocolate.
I believe that was the first thing I told the girls when you were coming over. I was like, chocolate's her favorite, period. We don't need any more information. But you also run a very successful and independent cooking school in Santa Monica.
It is independent. So I co-own a recreational cooking school called Gourmandise in Santa Monica. So we're a small business on the third floor of like a kind of a fancy mall at the end of the promenade by the pier. And we've been there for 13 years. It's a really special place.
Yeah. You guys teach savory, sweets to all ages.
Yeah. Every chef sort of has their own niche. So we don't like to just like stack the calendar based on schedules. We really curate a schedule and a calendar based on that chef's specialty. So I specialize in baking pastry, laminated doughs, baking the whole grains, all of that good stuff. And then we have other chefs who specialize in Thai cuisine or in technique classes like sauces and knife skills. So it's really fun, and it's a very warm and welcoming environment where anyone off the street, they do have to book ahead, but you know, can come in and feel very comfortable in a very professional setting and learn techniques and skills rather than recipes, per se.
Yeah.
So we're really about teaching the science and the history. I studied anthropology in college, so I really love the tie-ins between culture and agriculture and geopolitics and science and chemistry, eating, food, technique.
And our listeners are actually already familiar a little with Gourmandise School because when we did a self-interview, it was what I listed as my favorite food job in food ever.
And then
I
taught
there
Dara.
For 8 years. And then we had Dara, who at one point was my assistant and now is an instructor.
Yep.
So I feel like Gourmandise has gotten a lot of love on the podcast
Thank
already.
Thank you, guys.
It's our first sponsor.
Okay, well, let's dive right in since everyone's really excited about what you do already.
Yeah. Before starting the school, what were you doing in the food industry? Like, what was...
I think sort of the story behind the school is that it's very serendipitous and it wasn't very planned out. I grew up in a food business, and then I went to film school, moved out here, and worked in film for a few months before starting to sell cookies from my cubicle. Because I think the deal with food is you shouldn't work in food unless you can't not do it. And typically people can't not do it because it's all they know. It's that kind of energy, that physicality that a lot of people with this sort of inability to focus on certain tasks like thrive in. So
shout out to anyone who has ADHD. Consider food.
So I found myself kind of wanting that, but came out of essentially working at a studio, having a desk job, wanting to do this. And then there was this sort of like pivotal incident, what people now call core memories, which was really like the precipice for leaving and starting a little food company. And then I rented kitchen space in various places around town. And then I started charging people to come and like work with me, which became a class, which turned into renting spaces and teaching classes, and then turned into the school. So it wasn't like I woke up one day and I was like, ah, let's start a cooking school. It was very much, you know, like I had young kids, and doing production by yourself is very physically, emotionally, and economically taxing.
Definitely.
And so teaching sort of was the service side of the business, that hospitality piece that I grew up really admiring from my grandmother and my dad, and marrying that with the skills that I had developed. And so the school came out of that sort of like middle experience of like dipping my toes in the food pool. I don't know if that answered the question.
Yeah, totally. I was going to say, that class would be the business of food,
I do
food,
teach
right?
the business of food. Yeah, so along the way, I sort of, I don't know if any of you know this, but LA County Health Department is kind of a bear to work with. And shout out to everybody who works at LA County Health.
It's not your fault.
But, you know, it's a, you know, understanding city zoning laws and the health department and all the various agencies that you have to connect with in order to start a business is really, really challenging. And this woman, Jamie, who I'd shared a kitchen with, like, I was sort of like renting space, not knowing what to do and doing it all wrong and applying to farmers markets and not having the right paperwork. She got a little yellow post-it note and wrote down like, here's what you're going to do first, like file a DBA, five things. And then I did it and I was like, oh my gosh, I wish there was like a website where you could go. And so I started teaching this class called The Business of Food about 20 years ago so that people had a roadmap for being able to start their businesses and understanding, you know, having agency in doing this and not having to hire a lawyer in order to file paperwork for them. And for people to have a general understanding of how civics works, like here's where your tax dollars go. Here's why you have to pay this. Here's why you have to pay that. So you don't end up being a curmudgeon and you kind of understand how the systems work and how to not manipulate the system, but how to
play it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Play it.
I mean, I took the class from you 13 years ago. Yeah. And I believe I ended up like at the end of class being like, oh, also you can do this and this and this. And I'm so excited. And I still have not seen a similar class offered by anyone. And I'm pretty sure that most of the people who successfully opened food businesses in this town have at one point attended this class. So you have ended up being quite the matron figure, I think, in the food
I'm
world.
I'm old enough to be called a matron.
Well, I didn't mean it as an age. I meant it
no,
more
I
as like
it.
A respect.
The idea, yeah.
You know, and I also think it's really wonderful that on top of that, you build your community further by always sending out job opportunities and trying to connect people more. What are some other ways that you build up community with the platform you have?
Oh my gosh. Well, not to get on too much of a tangent, but that was like really the crux of it, why I started this food business. I was working at Fox and there was daycare on the lot. And that time my oldest, Malcolm, I think he was like just under two. Mm. And he came to my desk at lunchtime and then he kind of turned to me and he was like, okay, mama, so I'm going to go back to daycare and then you can play on the computer. And that, it sounds funny, but I was devastated. Yeah. I grew up in a family of entrepreneurs and I always saw my people working, like whether it was a trade show or working in the kitchen, going on orders, going to farms, picking up goat cheese, whatever it was, and turning that into a product and then turning that into sales, which paid for the rent, which paid for the vacations, like just this very tangible and very linear way of looking at how input and output works in terms of what you're producing, how you're contributing. And when he said that, I was like, he doesn't understand how work works. Like he has no concept. So I was like, I need to mirror like the kind of values that I want to instill in my kids. I need to have them see me working, buying things, turning them into something more tangible. So the way that I build community is really just about trying to get back to my roots, how I was growing up, which is that I knew every single person that had a part in whatever ingredient or material was needed and to turn it into something and then sell it. So, you know, it becomes the people that are around you. It becomes the people who take care of your kids in exchange for cookies. It becomes, you know, like lugging your kids to farmers market and knowing the market managers. And it's just, it's all of it. So community for me isn't just this like thing I give out. It's very reciprocal. And I feel so grateful for the food community in LA. I wanted to raise my kids in this community because I think the values presented and experienced and shared in it, you can't replicate that. Watching people work hard, I think, is something that you have to experience as a child so you understand why your parents do what they do. And it gives you some humility and work ethic. And I am proud to say that all of my kids have worked in kitchens and can dishwash like bears.
And one of them even works at the farmer's market, or maybe not anymore, but through high school was always at Andy's.
Oh, yeah. My middle daughter, well, I only have one daughter. She's the best person in the world. Her name's Olivia. And she, worked at Andy's Orchard. And her older brother is now a farmer. And then my youngest child, Zavi, who's just right. I see his foot right under the door. He's like a cat. He also is just great in the kitchen. Yeah, and, I think every parent wants their kid to kind of follow in their footsteps. I certainly do not want my kids to necessarily work in food, but I do want them to take the sort of culture of what it's like to work in food and bring that into whatever they're doing, like connecting with every single person that's part of the chain.
Through like building this community, do you have someone who you're like, they've supported me the most throughout this?
Oh my
gosh,
there are so many. Yeah. I mean, the first person I think of right away is Christine Moore from Little Flower.
She's Kleinman. Lovely.
She's lovely.
Lovely.
I don't want to cry too much. It's, it's really emotional to think about how people just in this LA food community are just always open to helping. Like anyone I've ever put in touch with as a mentor or a mentee has never let anybody down. Mm. It's just been a really beautiful thing. So Christine Moore is the first person I think of. Evan Kleinman, all women, by the way. All of them.
Yes, all always. Women.
Joan McNamara from Jones on Third.
Yeah,
I mean, all of them. I'm probably going to be so sad walking out of here being like, I didn't say this person. Everyone.
It's a good reason to get together a party.
Right. Yeah, get together a party and be like, hey, so I was on this podcast and they asked me who supported you and I didn't say you, so I'm throwing you a party.
I'm so sorry. And then we can all do dishes.
That's where the real bonding happens.
I think, big picture, LA food scene is really wonderful because nobody cared about it for so long. So LA food scene really came out of strip malls, dirty kitchens. I don't know if you know this, but until just a few years ago, under LA County Health rules, you couldn't have more than one entity in a kitchen under one health department permit. So that meant
I do remember that because that's when I started, was when you had to do it illegally.
You had to do it illegally. So you rented, let's say, a catering kitchen in Venice, and you had to write produced by this catering kitchen for my company, even though you were the one producing the product. Right. So the LA County Board of Supervisors only voted to allow for shared kitchens way less than a decade ago. And that's when you started seeing a lot of these shared kitchens popping up. But, without this very tight network of people helping each other out
on the down low,
on the DL,
there was no way to get started.
There was no way.
And then you had another explosion once AB 1616 and the cottage food laws got passed.
And then AB 626, as of 2 years ago, which still has not been adopted by LA County. I don't want a dog in LA County Health. I love you guys.
Everyone can be better.
What I try to explain in that Business of Food class is all of these things are paid for by our tax dollars and licenses. So it is really important for us to support, by going to city council meetings and understanding how the process works, that if we want laws like AB 626 to really be implemented, the cottage food law plus plus, so it allows you to make a certain number of refrigerated meals from home. There's only one county in California who has adopted this. It's San Bernardino County. And the reason that they're so special is because they have their own health department, but they also worked with their own city zoning laws to allow people to have them pick up. So you have little mini restaurants in San Bernardino County.
Little bodegas.
In people's homes.
I love that.
But it has to be, none of these agencies ever really speak to each other, especially in a really large county like LA.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the original question was.
And I think the message is to be a more civically engaged citizen, Los Angeles.
Yeah, because it's your money, right? So LA County Health, among many other agencies, can only work if we advocate for what we need. And if we support it, and I think there's been a lot of really great advances, particularly with street vending in LA. Another great example of this is this sort of public-private partnership between this really cool guy named Matt Geller, who was a lawyer who now advocates for mobile food vending across the country, but specifically in Venice. And there's a new tamale cart that's been created in conjunction with LA County Health. So So all of these things have really helped businesses to start, especially from like the super ground up. But it has been really challenging in LA to grow businesses because there was no investment in LA.
Yeah.
But what that created were really small mom and pops that were, for the lack of the better, like terrible cliche term, chef driven. But that's why we don't have, you know, these massive $9 million restaurants with atriums built out in LA like you do in San Francisco, New York, Chicago. Which is good, because in the end, we're not looking for investments to be paid back for like all the bells and whistles that really don't highlight the food part of it. And I think that's why LA food is so interesting and why the food itself isn't as compromised maybe as in other markets. Mm.
Plus, we have the best produce in the nation.
The best.
Yeah. Everyone wants it. Everyone orders it.
Do you mean to talk about politics in farmers markets?
I feel like that would be its own podcast, so we'll have to have you back. But I am curious about what you think is a common misconception about working in food that you would like to clarify.
Oh, the common misconception
she's like, I got it.
about working in food is that it's like this really cool club of like really snarky, cool people. It is like, what is true. I mean, yeah.
Well, you can Cassie's trying to keep that. Cool.
I think the glossiness of it is like a little bit toxic in the way that when you're working in food and you really want to have a lasting career, like your reputation is number one, be kind. Mm-hmm. And I think there's this, all this like stuff around like, oh, I want to be a chef, you know, and this very little bit machismo, a little bit very masculine energy. Mm. When I think the reality of it is like you're on your feet 12 to 14 hours a day. A lot of labor laws have been enacted since I started in the food business that have made it a lot easier to work in food without being like, abused.
Cheated.
All the things.
Mistreated.
Which I think are really great. Yeah, I think the common misconception is that it's this like really cool thing. And the reality of it is if you don't take care of your body and you don't take care of your like mind, you're going to have a really short career.
Yeah.
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 I definitely
remember. My poor back right now.
Yeah.
It's just like.
Yeah. It's funny because when I was in law school and I was always questioning chefs what they were making because I was working in restaurants, I also took note of the fact that they were getting shoulder surgery and hip surgery. And I was like, well, that is one career I'm never going to do. And then here we are.
Here we are.
I am limping.
Which, like, now that we're talking about, like, pregnant women in
yes,
kitchens
ma'am.
Working, like, how are we, like, how are you just not revered as the most badass people ever? Like, I'm struggling to work with my body as is in the kitchen. And you
really
did it three
simple.
Times.
It's really simple. Like, you have to do what you have to do. Here's the struggle. Like, I rented a kitchen for 5 years, but I could only afford the night shift, and I would get my kids dressed for school the next day for like little daycare or preschool, and they would sleep in bean bags on the floor of that kitchen. In their outfits. And in the morning before nice. Deliveries, I would drop them off, and then, or they would be in the car with me when I had a car, and otherwise we would do deliveries on the bus. And then, yeah, like my daughter was strapped to me in a sling for the first 3 years of her life, like hanging over 120 quart Hobart. Smart? No. Necessary? Yes. Yes. And like you do what you have to do. Mm. And it's really, really fucking hard. It's yeah, really yeah. hard, but like I am incredibly grateful for having had the ability to do it. And having my kids witness that mm-hmm. and see like what it takes. It's too easy to like, you know, grow up in a family where like work is like you go to work and then you come home and you don't really see what your parents do and to sort of recognize effort.
But now that your kids are grown, what does your self-care look like?
There's no self-care. First of all, they're not all grown. I, you know, Zavi's 12, so I have 6 more years of parent-teacher conferences. And it's great. Like, it's great to have another go around at it. And every kid is so different that it's kind of neat. Sort of like you're learning to be a parent all over again. But your parenting never ends. Like, my 25-year-old is texting me right now because he just got a job and his car broke down and he can't get to Denver from Seattle. And
always a mama.
Yeah.
I don't know where this idea that it ends at 18 goes. Because I was 100% like, does not. It seems like it's for life.
Or the idea that you have it together by 25. Because
I am 47 and I do not have it together. Yeah. I'm making it really clear. It
together. All right, let's rephrase the question. What would your dream self-care look like?
Oh, dream self-care. I don't know how to get off the hamster wheel. Mm-hmm. The last 2 weeks have been really humbling. I had, to your point, elbow surgery for, you know, doing this for 25 years and not doing what I was supposed to do in order to take care of my body. But yeah, ideally self-care will come like when, right around when, I think I will be like 82.
Oh, nice.
And,
retirement age.
Good number. It's a good number.
I'll be 82. Round. And, you know, I'll just be taking care of great grandkids. No pressure. And like walking through a field of lavender. That's what I'm going. That's my goal.
I love that.
Gotta have goals.
Yeah.
You mentioned working in film earlier, and mm-hmm. I wonder, A, what you did in film, mm-hmm. and B, if that like ever kind of bleeds into the work you do now.
I went to film school in New York and studied film and anthropology. I wanted to make documentaries. I was really interested in cultural anthropology. And while I was in college, I went to college in upstate New York. I worked for Miramax, and then I moved out here. And was exposed to a way of working and taking shit that was told that it was entirely normal and that's what I should expect. Mm-hmm. And when that is normalized, it's just not okay. So I worked in film, primarily in marketing, on the theatrical side, on the movie side, and had a really, really great boss, like really great boss. But I think I saw some things that went on that were humanity-wise so unkind. Like all those things kind of came together and I was like, I can't raise my kids in this. It's just not okay.
What is something that you are passionate outside of food if film no longer has your heart?
Oh, equity, policy. I'm always reading, always learning about food history and accountability. Mm-hmm.
It's like higher level stuff. I like it.
No, it's just like...
I was like, general hobbies are all... General hobbies?
I don't know about you guys, but like, I don't really have... Hobbies. Like, I don't have the mental space or the physical space for hobbies. I love to be in the ice, swim in the ocean. And I like to say that I surf, but I don't actually get up. I'm not able to get up on the board. So I have many wetsuits. And I leave them out for friends all the time.
Yeah. Costuming is everything, you know? Like, if you look the part.
I'm more like a beach whale, but but I'm always like, if anybody wants to come with me. So, yeah, I really love the ocean, but I don't have any really outside hobbies other than parenting three of the coolest humans ever.
Do you have a favorite food scene from film?
Oh, gosh. I don't really see movies a lot.
Even an old one.
We will accept every scene in Ratatouille.
I have not seen Ratatouille.
What?
I know. Okay. You guys, I've been working. I've literally.
It's like one time you're making cookies by yourself in the school. Just throw it up on your laptop. It's a real heart warmer.
Okay.
It's about a rat who controls a chef from inside his hat.
Okay, let me say this. I'm going to say this. In France, Ratatouille is like the most awful dish you could serve to a child. It's basically boiled zucchini. Mm-hmm. And unless you're making it in the southern way, which is called tian, where it's more like almost like if you just thinly slice like tomatoes, eggplant, zucchini, and you scallop them and mm-hmm. yeah, and that's roasted, it's much better. But classic ratatouille is like every kid's nightmare.
I can one-up you because when I studied abroad in France in Annecy, and I know my host mom was getting 100 euros a week to feed me, she once served me hot ketchup on rice and told me it was a poor man's ratatouille. And I burst into tears and I said, I thought ratatouille was a poor man's ratatouille. I did not know it got much poorer.
She was making bank.
Yes, she was. And I have no qualms calling her out on it. Hot ketchup and rice is the worst thing you can serve a child.
That is rough.
If you were to ever pivot out of food,
oh,
what would you do?
Huh.
Or do you see yourself running the gourmandise school until that 82 market we're trying for.
maybe like very, very small scale farming. I don't know. I say that, but like I probably can't physically do that.
But you could supervise teaching, Malcolm.
I mean, I teach. I know, right? I don't think he wants me there. I would say doing more teaching. So I didn't graduate from college, so I can't technically teach, but I do get to lecture quite often at Occidental or UC Northridge and stuff like that. So I go in and I teach this fun class that I developed with Ruth Kennison, our chocolate maker, called Chocolate and the Colombian Exchange, where I explain the Colombian Exchange, like the exchange of technology, disease, and food during that period of time when Columbus and thieves that came after him traversed the Atlantic and landed here. So I think probably more of that. More talking, less moving as I get older.
I feel like we need to shout out the chocolate club you run. Is it still
so
once
I
a
don't
month?
Run it, but Ruth does. Well, you host out of it. Our school. Yeah, I host it. It's called the Santa Monica Chocolate Society, and it's one Tuesday every month, and it's dedicated to tasting craft bean to bar makers around the world.
And it's open to everyone, right?
Open to everyone. It's really, really
it's
neat.
Very fun.
Yeah.
I've been a couple times. Yeah.
It's really cool.
Also, Syracuse, can we get an honorary degree for this incredibly accomplished woman, please?
I mean, I'm only 9 credit hours short, but it's so just close. Syracuse. It would be really nice if you just let me take some Santa Monica College classes and transfer them over. But
come on, let's Syracuse. Say it one more time. Syracuse is our sponsor.
Okay. Let's go Syracuse.
Let's go Orange.
Okay. So in a world where you do stop working, mm-hmm. where would you travel just to eat?
Oh my gosh. My favorite place I ever went to was like 30 years ago. And I went to Portugal with, you know, there was before cell phones. I traveled by myself and met my boyfriend at the time, who ended up being my husband, and traveled down there by myself. Had no address, just like a general location, showed up there and spent 3 weeks like sitting on the beach eating freshly caught fish.
Yum.
That's my idea of a vacation. I think that's my favorite place I've ever been to, and I might go back.
You should. Yeah. Portugal's magical. I only spent like 4 days there, and I still been. Like think about it
it's
nonstop.
Great. I think a lot of people have figured this out, and it makes me nervous to try to go. But
Portugal's terrible. Stop going there.
Stop going there. But honestly, I would probably go home. I grew up in Paris, but all of my family is in the southeastern part of France, and that's where I spent most of my time after we moved to the U.S. And I miss the air, the food, my family. Like, that's where I would go. Less vacation, more wanting to feel like where I belong, even though this is my chosen home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, before we go into our beloved rapid fire,
oh, yeah.
I think we need a moment for you to shout out any cool projects that you're working on, that you have upcoming, that the people just, they need to know. They need to know.
So my boyfriend and I signed a lease for a bakery.
Where?
So this is where community is everything. We were at a trade show in Vegas. I'm waiting for a very much delayed flight, and phone rings, and this guy who had taken the business of food class many years ago called me, and he's like, hey, listen, like, I'm retiring and you're the first person I thought I'd call. Like, do you have any interest in taking over my bakery? It's like 4 years old, fully built out, just turnkey.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The landlord is down with whoever I recommend. And I was like, well, let me think about, you know, I have students who probably would be really interested. And then Tony next to me was like, what? Say more. and so we're like, oh, let's take a look at it. And then, you know, very shortly thereafter, we're like, you can't pass this up. These things don't
Fall
ever happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's no change of use. Everything's up to code.
Wow.
The landlord only wants a local tenant and didn't ask for much. And he had been wanting to find a place for a long time. So I'm still 100% at Gourmandise, but this is like a side project that is sort of like a natural addition to what I'm already doing. He's really, really talented. So I'm really excited for him to have that opportunity and to have, you know, another outlet, another creative outlet.
That's so exciting. Is it going to be in Santa Monica?
It's on Wilshire at 12th.
Oh my God. I'm not from here, so that kind of means nothing to me.
It's just like, I don't know maps, though.
We'll try.
It's pretty great.
Okay, cool, cool.
Very exciting. Wow. Well, I know that when it opens, it's going to be bonkers because the few pop-ups you've done have been bonkers. And I have loved everything I've ever eaten that you have ever made. So I'm selfishly excited. It's really not about you anymore. This is about my joy.
Thanks for doing this for Rose.
Yeah. It's going to be for you too.
Here's the good part. So the only thing we have to buy is like a sheeter and a proofer, and we're going to be closed because quality of life as you get older, and we're older, is very important. We'll be closed on Mondays and Tuesdays. So we're selecting Tuesdays to be like community pop-up days. So any chefs who want to come and do a pop-up, that's what that day is reserved for.
Amazing. So keep that community building going.
Yeah, right? And I really, I want to share, all of the information of what, goes into taking over a space. So I'm open to anybody reaching out and being like, well, how do you take over a space? Like, when is it feasible? When is it not? What do you have to look for? Because the only way this works is if you understand, the value proposition and when it's not okay to take over a space and when you shouldn't do it. And so it just, all the stars kind of align, and it's something that we teach a lot in our consulting and in that business of food class is like, how do you know all the information and all the moving parts before you make decisions like this? So I really encourage everybody to reach out because I'm totally open book, happy to tell you all the ways that we can make it happen. And yeah.
How do people reach out to you? Where will they find you?
So we have a hotline. It's the direct messages at Gourmandise LA. I used to run the hotline from my cell phone, but that is no longer public information. So
good for you. Yeah. We're going to count boundaries. That as self-care.
Yes.
So we actually, I check it every hour between about 6 a.m. and midnight. Right now I have, I think, 11 messages on the hotline. They range from
sizzling line.
But it's great. A lot of messages come from chefs who are too embarrassed to ask people. So that's kind of my favorite thing. A lot of us didn't go to culinary school. I did not. And if I can't answer your question, I'm pretty resourceful and can find the info for you. It's from what temperature should I cook chicken to where do you get Ras El Hanout and what is it? Or is my bread ready? Because you can attach a picture. So it's the direct... It's the direct messages at Gourmandise LA. Gourmandise LA.
Very cool. Love it. Well, I think it's time for Rapid Fire. All right, so the rules are...
We're going to ask you questions in rapid succession. You're going to answer the first thing that comes to mind without any context. Just first thought,
filters.
Go.
Yeah.
Just go. Okay.
Yeah, no context. It's just, short and sweet and stand behind it.
Okay.
All right. 5, 6, 7, 8. Your favorite thing to eat right now?
Chocolate.
Favorite kitchen utensil?
Offset spatula.
What ingredient is
bench
overrated?
Scraper. Sorry.
We'll accept it.
Okay. Yeah. What ingredient is overrated?
Almost all of them.
Except chocolate.
Except chocolate.
What are you currently reading?
The Secret Life of Groceries for the third time.
Ooh.
You're going to a potluck. What are you bringing?
Cookies.
Favorite season for produce?
June.
What show are you binge watching? If any.
Love is Blind.
Okay.
I cannot get enough.
I saw
DM me if you have questions.
That was the smartest person you know is watching reality television.
Actually, listen, I went to film school, so I can actually speak to this. So my professor in film school, who's very well regarded, said that the people with the highest IQ watch the lowest brow television because it's the only way that their brain can process the day's events. And so shout out to all the super high IQ people watching Love is Blind right now.
Yeah. You're actually doing the hard policy work for America.
Thank you.
What are you listening to right now?
Whatever my son is listening to, meaning a lot of Kanye. I'm not here for it.
Are you listening to the new album?
I don't even know.
It came out a week or two ago.
I have no idea. But my favorite singer is Roberta Flack.
Oh, nice.
Look her up.
Final question. Best grocery store hot bar?
I have never eaten at a grocery store hot bar.
So they're all
y'all must have a lot of disposable income. That shit's expensive.
Neither do I.
All right, well, thank you for joining us today on Kitchen Tape. It was really a joy to have you, Clemence.
I feel incredibly honored and grateful.
And I can't wait to check out the new bakery.
Yeah. Right.
And as always,
eat cute.
Be cute.
Aw.
Do you want to introduce yourself?
I'm Xavier Gossett, the son of Clemence.
All right, Zavi. I first met you when you were probably 4 or 5 years old and you were climbing your mother at the farmer's market. Do you have any favorite memories from your legendary days as being a market kid?
I think the bin that I was in.
Mm-hmm.
The
cart?
The cart, yeah.
Just hanging out in the cart, eating the berries? Yeah, that was solid.
So your mom tells us you like Kanye. What's your favorite Kanye song?
Probably Runaway.
Okay.
What's your favorite thing your mom bakes?
Panettone.
It's like
candy.
That's a skill in that one.
Candy cake.
Yeah.
If you were to make something for your mom, what would you make for her?
I don't know. She's looking at me like that I have to know.
No right or wrong answers, but I do know that you bake too. So what do you like to make?
I like making pasta.
Ooh, what's your favorite kind of pasta? Shape.
Shape, linguine. Mm.
Sauce.
The rouse. You know the rouse.
Oh, fancy.
The roasted garlic.
Ooh, good taste. What is a misconception about being the child of a person in food that you want to clarify?
That my mom's like a really good cook, but
but she's a better baker?
No, she's a good baker, but she's not. She's not, like, a really, really good
She's
cook.
No Rayo.
Yeah.
But I do think we should make an argument that your standards are also probably higher than the average person.
that she's not much of a cook, but she's more of a baker.
Okay.
Do you see a future for yourself in food?
Mm-mm. Oh, okay. Well, what do you see in your future?
Basketball.
What's your favorite team?
Lakers.
Of course. Duh. I don't know.
Yeah.
All right, well, Zavi, thank you for being on our bonus episode of
Kitchen Tape.
what is this? We really appreciate you coming. Well, as always,
be cute.
Be cute.
Thank you for joining us this week on Kitchen Tape. Our theme music is created by Dan Crabtree. You can subscribe on Spotify and Apple to be notified when we release new episodes every other Tuesday. If you enjoyed this week's episode, we'd love it if you left us a review. If you'd like to be a guest on a future episode, contact us on social media. You can reach Rose at TRoseWild and Cassie at IBakeMistakes or email us at kitchentapepod@gmail.com. Catch you next time on Kitchen Tape Podcast.